Well, my next guest is no stranger to the air in every way, shape, or form. She's the host of The Kelly File. Her book is called Settle for More. But keep in mind, when you talk to Megyn Kelly, at times she scares easily.
That was a new alert animation. It scared me a little bit. Maybe we should be scared. Joining me now, Chris Tyrewell.
Good to be here.
So, did you think of the alert animation? Did it scare you?
I was a little frightened. I thought something really, really bad was happening instead of just the standard badness.
That's terrifying.
Megyn Kelly joins us right now, and when she's terrified, she laughs. Settle for More, the name of her best-selling book. Megyn, do you remember that?
Yes, vividly, because it had aired like once before, and we were all alarmed, and then it came up again, and it was like, help! What could possibly be so urgent?
And Chris Tyrewell's had a kid around with you, so now we know. We're so used to it. I think you start your show with it every day.
We don't use an alert. No, we don't. We save that one for the true emergencies. And so trust me, you know, given the effect it has on me, you're never going to see that on the Fox News Channel Kelly File unless there's a true emergency.
So, Megyn, to write your own story, it must have been so interesting to go over your own life in detail. What was harder, talking about it with people like me and other media outlets, or actually writing it?
Well, the writing of it was actually kind of enjoyable. It was kind of cathartic. So I enjoyed that. The last week, you know, when I sort of unveiled the book and went on a media promotion tour was bizarre because the beginning half of the week, of course, all the outside media wanted to focus on Trump and our former boss. And those are not my favorite chapters of the book, only because obviously the Ailes thing is obvious, but the Trump stuff has gotten spun by, you know, some in the media to be some sort of a hit on Trump, and it's not at all. It just documents what happened between the two of us. And we actually wound up in a good place, but, you know, some people spun it a little differently. And listen, there's no question it's not a pleasant tale about what happened in my life with Donald Trump last year. However, the bulk of the story is about my life, and I think, you know, how adversity is an opportunity and developing grit. And I think it's an uplifting story about how if you're feeling sad or if you're feeling down or feeling a general sense of malaise, it's up to you to change your life, you know, that no one is coming to save you. And I know this firsthand because I've been there too.
Right. So Megyn Kelly with us, of course. Megyn, actually, the name grit, they say that's the most valuable thing a young person can have and learn if they're going to be successful and happy in life. It's grit, and you just used it. You also talked about, and it's so brilliant in your title, Settle for More. You got that watching Dr. Phil.
Yeah.
So tell me how that came to be. And, of course, your first big interview was with Dr. Phil.
So I always admired him when I was an unhappy lawyer. I thought his advice on those Tuesdays with Oprah he used to do was so sage and spot on for someone like me. I loved Oprah too. You know, she was very spiritual. But I would say Dr. Phil's sort of down home, late on the line kind of advice was more up my alley. And one night, I document this in the book, you know, I was succeeding on paper, Brian. You know, I'd gotten myself an amazing law job at this great firm, and I was getting wonderful assignments and big raises and bonuses and so on. And it's very hard to admit to yourself that you're unhappy when you're making money, when you're getting positive reviews, you know, when others who are above you on the totem pole are saying good things to you about your performance. But sometimes you smack head first into that brick wall of unhappiness and you have no choice but to admit it to yourself that you're just not happy. And one night I was sitting on that couch watching the midnight rerun of Oprah, and Dr. Phil said on her show, the only difference between you and someone you envy is you settled for less. And I just, you know, I resolved in that moment that I could settle for more, that I didn't have to live my life the way I had been living it, that I could just make better choices for myself and perhaps find happiness. And, you know, on the envy front, I had wanted to go to broadcast journalism school when I applied to college, but I didn't get into Newhouse at Syracuse, the journalism school. They rejected me.
Yep.
They did.
I know. Hey, they rejected me too. That's why I didn't go there. Plus, it was about $10,000 more than I could afford.
I know. Well, that's the thing. So it's kind of a sweet and sad story, but my dad had taught, I go in the book, I go into my upbringing and my family, which I think a lot of our viewers and your listeners will appreciate, because it was not a you are special kind of family. You know, there were no trophies for everyone in our family, but they were very loving. I mean, if you accomplished something, you were praised, but it wasn't, you weren't praised just for drawing two lines on a piece of paper and putting it on the refrigerator.
Right. Like,
there's nothing extraordinary about that. Now, I write in the book that Settle for More, that the philosophy was kind of, it wasn't you are special. It was more like, you don't seem that special so far, and we're fine with that.
That's great.
But no, anyway, so I go to Syracuse. I went to the poli sci school, and my mom used, my dad died while I was a sophomore in high school, and my mom used his insurance policy to pay for my college because she knew I wanted to go to Syracuse, and my dad had taught at Syracuse, and our whole family had a connection to the city and to the university. And it was, I never knew. I didn't know that she used DART. You know what I mean? Like when you're 17 years old and off to college, you don't really know where the money's coming from. You know, your parents tell you whether they can afford it or they can't. And it just, it says so much about my mom that, you know, she's a nurse, she's struggling, she's already got two kids in college, and she knew I wanted to go there, and she knew my dad would have loved it if I went there, and she used his insurance policy to send me to Syracuse University.
And you better study, and you did really, you did well there, and then you end up going on to law school. So if you're coming from a long line of, if your family is one of these families that goes month to month with their bills, and next thing you know, Megan, you're paying your bills, and you're married to a doctor, you're living in a major city, and you're saying to yourself, I should be happier, but I'm not. So you take action. And you start going around to various spots in Chicago doing some stand-ups where you're getting used to being on television and getting this thing called a tape together. Along the way, and it happens a lot when I know people, that when they talk about their life and successful, people go out of their way for you. And I think it's because they saw your hustle and how genuine you are and how sincere you were in trying to do this. Who were some of the people that went out of their way to shoot these stand-ups for you and maybe edit them?
Well, there were a couple of people who really were key to my transition from law into journalism. And the first person was this woman named Meredith, who I met in my Sunday guitar class that I used to take. It was my one source of happiness, honestly. When I was practicing law, I had no time for joy in my life. And so I would make time every Sunday to go to this guitar class, which I loved. And I was never very good, and I'm still not good, but I loved it. And there's something about sitting around in a circle playing music with others. It's almost spiritual in a way. You know, it's the same feeling you get when you're at church and you stand together and you kneel together and you pray together. And one Sunday, my friend Meredith missed class, and when she came back the following Sunday, I asked her where she was, and she said that the space shuttle Columbia had blown up, which I had known, but I didn't know she was in news. And I said, "You're in news?" So I offered to buy her a cup of coffee, which she agreed to. And then she helped me. She was a freelance reporter and producer at WMAQ, the NBC affiliate in Chicago. She offered to help me make a resume tape. She introduced me to this cameraman, this guy named Bond Lee. She's like, you know, I don't know if he'll shoot your tape for you, but if he will, you got it made, because he's the best photographer we have. So one day we all went out to a bar so she can introduce me to Bond Lee. We're standing in this bar, and I had prepared for, I'm an over-preparer, right? Because In the book, I talk about how one time I said to my mom, "Mom, am I really smart?" She said, "You're about average." So I always over-prepare. That's my key, Brian. That's what helps me get ahead. You know, I don't need to be the smartest person in the world, but I do have to be prepared. So I prepared for that drink at the bar like I was going into the U.S. Supreme Court. I read all the newspapers front to back because I was going to meet Bond. And we're standing in the middle of this bar, and Bond Lee says to me, "So you want to be on TV?" And I said, "I think I'd be good at it." And he said, "Everyone thinks that." And I said, "No, but I really think I will." And he said, "Tell me a story in a minute or less." So I banged out 60 seconds on Robert Chambers, the preppy murderer, remember him? In New York City. And I didn't stutter. You know, I managed to get through it beginning to end. And he stopped. I stopped, and I looked at him. The crowd looked at him, you know, the WMAQ folks. And he said, "You're going to be on TV."
Wow.
And then he agreed to shoot my tape for me. And, you know, then he got me into this journalism class with a friend of his, Professor Robert Schatz was the guy's name. And he's the one who shot those, you know, little vignettes of me on the streets of Chicago late at night when I was praying no lawyers from Jones Day would walk by and see what I was doing as a moonlighter.
Jones Day, the name of the law firm.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's sort of how it all started.
You change gears, you go to Washington, and you get hired part-time as a reporter, right?
Correct. So things were really taking off for me in Chicago. You know, I had a couple of connections now. I knew some people at WMAQ. Not that they were going to hire me at the third largest market, but I figured maybe they could put a good word in for me for someplace. And then my husband at the time, my first husband, took a fellowship at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore. So, bam, we were out of Chicago, which I was bummed about. And I didn't know what to do. I know I'm sitting in Baltimore. I'm depressed. I'm still practicing law. I have no leads, none in TV out here. I don't know a soul. I tried to cold call some agents, all of whom hung up on me. And then one day, I was sitting at home in my Baltimore rodent motel because we had tons of mice in our apartment. And the Jessica Savage story came on Lifetime TV. And she was a contemporary to Sam Donaldson, Peter Jennings, all those guys. And one of the only major faces, major female faces of news in the late 70s, early 80s, she and Connie Chung and Barbara Walters. And she came from nothing. She was like me. She came from a very modest background. Her dad had died young when she was a child. She, like me, had sort of this need to try to be perfect as a defense mechanism. And she kept journals just like me. Anyway, there I am sitting there watching the Jessica Savage story. When when the credits rolled, I said, you know what, if this woman could do it then, in what was very much a male-dominated industry at the time,
right,
I can do it now. And that's when I started cold calling not agents but news directors and trying to find one who would let me drop off my tape in person. Because I knew if I could get face-to-face, Brian, I could talk my way into a job, you know?
Yep.
I argued for a living. And I figured to myself, if I can't argue my way into a job, I'm not very good at what I do. And then that poor soul, Bill Lord,
right,
at WJLA, which is it was the ABC affiliate in Washington, D.C., said yes. I got him on the phone, and he said I could swing by with my tape. And he hired me. Lo and behold, that man hired me for one day a week. And that was all I needed, just a foot in the door.
And here's one of those reports. That was Channel 8, right?
It was Channel 7, which is the ABC affiliate, but they also had sort of the sister cable channel,
right,
which was less known and not as widely viewed. And that's why I called them. I figured maybe they'll put me on that cable channel that not as many people watch while I get good. But lo and behold, the man hired me for the ABC affiliate and let me get my sea legs on the news Channel 8.
Here is Megan early on, one of her first reports, Cut 29.
So are the tickets for the Forest Park Junior-Senior Prom sold out, or aren't they?
No, we hadn't sold out of the tickets.
They were sold out. We were told as of Wednesday they were sold out.
Originally, there were about 550 tickets. The school increased that to 825 once the problem hit.
And we want to leave a cliffhanger and not tell you how the prom story ends. But you were even good then. I mean, listen how precise you were. I mean, that you're actually cutting a professional. That is a great story. And you're handling a tough topic. Prom tickets.
You're very kind. I can hear the nerves in my own voice. You know, it's like, it's funny to look back at those early tapes and see. I think everyone can relate to starting a new job and feeling kind of, you know, like you don't know what the heck you're doing. Unfortunately, for those of us in TV,
right,
it's all documented. And I remember talking to somebody early on at Fox when because I came here after only 9 months doing that job. And there was a guy here, Bob Sellers. Remember him?
Sure.
And I said, geez, Bob, you know, I screwed this up or I screwed that up on the air. And he said, yeah, well, you know, there's a saying in TV news, for that, there's Peoria. Meaning that's where most people earn their stripes,
exactly,
not in front of a national audience.
So Megan, just real quick, for people to pick up the book, if you're not even interested in news, since I have an 8th grader and a 10th grader, I think it's an important book. Your childhood to me and what you did in that transition is important. But the childhood, too, you grow up, you have the tragedy of your dad passing away suddenly, shockingly. Number two, you understand what it's like to grow up really quick. And number three, you understand what it's like to be the most popular person and to be the most unpopular person. And how you handle those moments helps you cope the rest of your life. It toughens your skin to be successful later on. And if someone could hear that Megyn Kelly went through that, they might be heartened right now in junior high school or in the, you know, their freshman or sophomore year in high school.
Well, thank you for saying that. I've been so uplifted by the messages I've gotten, like on Facebook and Amazon and elsewhere, from people who say, I am absolutely buying this for my child. Those are the ones that really make my heart sing. Like, I want my child to read this, because I think the overall message of the book is really you know, work hard and then work harder, and don't let the negative people get you down or steal your mojo. And no one is coming to save you. You know, if you are unhappy in your life, you have to change it. And it doesn't take great advantage. Listen, my greatest advantage, I think, like yours, Brian, was even though we both lost our dads at young ages, we were born into loving families. And anyone can give their child that. Anyone can give their child that, you know. Just, and it doesn't even have to be you're so special. Quite the contrary. But
right.
Love and the willingness to love unconditionally, that's what I had. And then, you know, what the book shows is that, yes, I was badly, very badly bullied for an entire year of my seventh grade, which I go through in detail. Lost my dad when I was 15 to a sudden heart attack. He was 45. And there were plenty other, you know, challenges along the way, including professional challenges once I got to be a lawyer, once I realized I was unhappily married and so on. But you have to fight through them. And actually, the only chance you ever have as a human being to grow or develop courage or develop grit or strength is adversity.
Almost, you don't want it, but you got to hope to experience it because it makes you stronger. You learn from it. If you don't like the way you act through adversity, that also can be a learning experience. So, and you say, next time when I get this opportunity, I'm not going to fold. I'm not going to melt. I'm not going to explode in anger. Megan,
you understand it's a test of you. It's a test of who you are, what you stand for. And as my mom always says, the true test of an emotionally healthy person is not avoiding upset. It's how you handle upset when it comes along.
She's host of The Kelly File, and unless something happens, she's going to be doing that show tonight.
wow.
Megan is the host of The Kelly File. She's going to see you tonight at 9. But more importantly, for now, pick up her book, Settle for More. It'll be a great Christmas present or whatever holiday it is. Megan, thanks so much. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Thanks, Brian. I appreciate it. All the best.